Greetings, America. Welcome, Truth Seekers. Happy, happy Black Friday. I can't believe that everybody even knows what Black Friday is at this point. You know, they used to talk about Black Friday. It was like a financial term. It was for retailers. Now it's weird. We're celebrating Black Friday. Well, since you guys all know what that is, since everybody talked about it all day long, I won't because I don't give a damn. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen blogger, investigative journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all the rest. In for Mike Malloy tonight, all evening long, delighted to be with you, live broadcasting from beautiful downtown Burbank here on the left coast of these United States. Hope you're doing well. Hope you have woken up from your tryptophan coma. Mike Malloy will be back with you next Monday, but until then, you got me. Get used to it. Sorry. That's the way it goes. I'm delighted to be here with you tonight, and hope you will participate in the broadcast if you wish. If you do, take down this phone number. You may need it throughout the night when I either tick you off or make you so happy you want to call in to 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Don't bother the Malloys with the usual number. Use that one instead. Of course, they wouldn't hear you because I think they're out having fun or something like that. We are having fun, too. Oh, and you can also join us on the Twitters by sending a note to the Brad Blog. That's me. I am the guy from bradblog.com, in case you're wondering, in case you don't know. And if you don't, well, then shame on you. Also, you can stop by bradblog.com, where there is a lively chat room going on, being hosted not only by the lovely Desi Doyen, but yes, the lovely and delightful Jeannie Dean is there. Everyone's favorite, America's favorite chat hostess, who has not been able to be with us lately. She is with us today. So come on by and harangue her. I mean, say hello to her. In the chat room, go to bradblog.com, the top item there. You'll see the links that says, you know, click here for the chat room. Go on in there. If you're too dumb to figure out how to do that, we don't want to hear from you anyway. But, big show coming up tonight. David Swanson is going to be joining us in a bit to talk about his provocative new book, War is a Lie. A lot of stuff about war in the air lately. A lot of stuff from the Koreas to Iran. I'm hearing the drumbeats of war again, and it's kind of bothering me. So we're going to talk to David Swanson about that. He says war is a lie. He says all wars are built on lies. Really? All right. Well, we'll try to hold his feet to the fire there in just a few minutes. And if you have questions for him, you can get more information on the book, by the way, at warisalie.org. Couple of quick news items because, it's one of them slow Thanksgiving weekend things. So there's a lot of ridiculous news. One, Obama has a fat lip. 12 stitches? 12 stitches for the president. This is not going to look good. This is not. He was playing basketball, and someone elbowed him. We still don't know who. I don't think we yet know the identity of the person who elbowed the president of the United States in the lip, requiring 12 stitches. What is it with our presidents, man? Remember George Bush? He fell off his couch because he's a jackass. Remember, he choked on a pretzel. This was the story. He choked on a pretzel and fell off the couch. Remember that, Tone? All right. How that happens, I'm not entirely sure. But so he got beat up there. He got like a black eye. Then he fell off his bike. He got his face beat up. Remember that? Got his face. You don't remember? All right. You don't pay attention to this stuff, do you? You don't care about politics. You hate Tony, how was your Thanksgiving? Because you're never on the air, so let me just take this time. How was your Thanksgiving? Did you have a nice Thanksgiving?
It was nice. It was family eating.
You were worried there wasn't going to be enough turkey.
There was enough. My mom made extra.
Your mom saved the day?
Because
some uncle was coming, was not going to, yeah, okay. Well,
basically, no, yeah, you had to cook a second one, yeah.
Uh-huh. A secondary turkey. All right, good. So you had plenty to eat.
Oh, yeah.
You rested up. You didn't rest up, did you? Because you were in here in this very studio this morning.
With Hal, yes.
With Hal Sparks, right, yes, in the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yes.
All right. Sorry about that. Well, we'll keep you wide awake.
I promise. I'm good to go.
You're up.
I'm good.
And you got some of your kick-ass music.
Oh, yeah, of course.
To keep us awake. Mm-hmm. All right. Well done. Well, good to see you. You look good. I feel better. I've had a cold all week. I finally got some rest yesterday. Had no Thanksgiving at all. Just stayed home and slept. And I rather enjoyed it. Okay, so Obama has a fat lip. 12 stitches. That's one news item. Here's another. Well, let me grab this here. Wait a minute. I can't find it. It's going to. There it is. Here we go. The geniuses over at Fox News. I love this, man. Geniuses over at Fox News, this secondary website. I don't even know what the hell this is. Fox Nation. Frankly, I don't understand it. They've had this up, foxnation.com. It's where it's because, I don't know, Fox News, you know, is straight news. But over Fox Nation, they can say anything they want, I guess. I don't know. Well, one of the news headlines, shocking, shocking today. Here's the headline. Frustrated Obama sends nation rambling 75,000-word email. Can you believe that? 75,000 words. Turns out, completely made up. It was an Onion story, but the dopes over at Fox Nation bought it. They bought into it. And this was one of the commenters, very funny, actually said, let's see, this is one of the comments. Betty Bonnie said that, quote, a friend of mine got the email because she was an Obama supporter. She forwarded it to me. It was pitiful. My friend thinks he is losing it, Obama. Obama's losing it because he's, you know, he's sending out these 75,000-word emails. My friend thinks he is losing it. I told her I knew this a long time ago. That's what Betty Bonnie said. Turns out Betty Bonnie was lying because there was no such email. It was a story from The Onion. How dumb are you people at Fox News? Well, that's a question that could be answered by a lot of you callers over the next 3 hours, but we're not going to do that. Instead, we're also going to bring you this shocking news, although this part, I believe, is true. Oh, stunning, though. Stunning. It comes from TMZ late today. Music legend Willie Nelson was arrested this morning for allegedly possessing 6 ounces of marijuana. Now, I don't know about you, but this has shattered everything I had felt about Willie Nelson up till now. I can't believe that Willie Nelson is a marijuana user. Shocking. He was busted at 9 a.m. at a Border Patrol checkpoint in Sierra Blanca, Texas. He was in his tour bus traveling from California to Austin when he was detained. He was booked into the Hudspeth County Jail on $2,500 bond and posted, which was posted shortly thereafter. He was allegedly possessing 6 ounces of marijuana. It's actually kind of a lot of marijuana, isn't it? Not if you're Willie Nelson, maybe, but so he's, I just can't believe to hear that Willie Nelson smokes pot. Also out here in California, we had a big bust today that they're all proud of where they found a tunnel going from Mexico, from somebody's house in Tijuana. I think the tunnel actually went from their kitchen in Tijuana, right? It was his kitchen? Kitchen in Tijuana, a half a mile across the border into San Diego, up into a warehouse where they were sending tons and tons of marijuana. The officials were very proud to say that they caught them today. Tons of marijuana were coming in. A 7-month investigation uncovered this tunnel, and man, oh man, is that a good use of our taxpayer dollars. Thank God we got those evil pot smokers busted down there in San Diego. I'm glad that we sell it legally here, by the way, in California. Medical marijuana, but, you know, anybody can really get it. That's the fact. But glad we're wasting taxpayer dollars on that. And at the same time, we've got, you know, billions. California budget is $1 billion. What is it, $40 billion deficit? Something like this. I don't know. Gosh, I wonder where we could save money. Perhaps not busting marijuana. Who cares? What else do we got that I want to get to? Okay, before we take a break here, something more serious and perhaps even more pathetic. But 9 years and 50 days as of today. 9 years and 50 days the U.S. has been in Afghanistan. It is now as long as the Soviet slog. It is our longest war in these United States. We've now been there longer than the Soviet Union was there. Soviet, yeah, this is from AP, Soviet Union couldn't win in Afghanistan, and now the United States is about to have something in common with that futile campaign. 9 years, 50 days. On Friday, the U.S.-led coalition will have been fighting there for as long as the Soviets did in their humbling attempts to build up a socialist state. The two invasions had different goals. Well, okay. And dramatically different body counts, that's true. But whether they have significantly different outcomes remains to be seen. Indeed, that is true. What started out as a quick war on October 7, 2001 by the U.S. and its allies to wipe out al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. How's that going for you? And the Taliban leader, how's that going for you, has instead turned into a long and slogging campaign with about 100,000 NATO troops fighting a burgeoning insurgency while trying to support and cultivate a nascent democracy. A Pentagon-led assessment released earlier this week described the progress made since the U.S. injected 30,000 more troops into Afghanistan earlier this year as fragile. That's putting it nicely. All right, well, we're going to talk probably to David Swanson, I bet has a thought or two about this mess and how we got into Afghanistan. He will be joining us next to discuss the lies that got us there and into a whole bunch of other wars. You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman sitting in for Mike all night long. Glad you can join us. Stay with us. A big, big shoe straight ahead. Oh, is that a little Willie Nelson? Smartly done. I'm wasted. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike. And we're going to try to leave a lot of time open in the show today for your calls if you want to get through to us later. Or even if you have a question for my next guest, you can dial 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. And an update from the last segment. We do now know who it was who gave the fat lip to Barack Obama. Let's see. Administration officials late Friday released a statement from Ray Desarega, not sure how to pronounce it, the director of programs for the Congressional Hispanic Caucus Institute, who injured Obama in the last of five-on-five games. I knew it was going to be the Hispanics. All right. David Swanson is a longtime peace, democracy, and social justice activist. Did you hear that, Glenn Beck? He's a social justice activist, and he's the author of the provocative new bestseller, War is a Lie, and which was released just earlier this week. And he's also the author of another book released, I think, earlier this year, wasn't it? Or was that last year, David, your last book, Daybreak?
Last year,
okay. It seems so recent. His previous book was Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. But now, the new book, War is a Lie, which you can get info about at warisalie.org. David Swanson joins me, comes back to the Mike Malloy Show. Hey, David, welcome, sir. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for not telling him I used to work for Acorn, too.
You had to say that, didn't you? So now it's the Hispanics. You didn't bust the president's lip, did you?
No.
You did used to work for Acorn, and as a matter of fact, on the way in here, I started getting Twittered by these jackasses who were saying the same old nonsense. I mean, they still don't get it. Speaking of lies, the fact that these wingnuts out there still believe that Acorn committed voter fraud, that they've stolen elections, isn't that, David, just the symptom of all the problems that we're looking at, including the one you've been writing about lately, war is a lie, that we've got a media who allows these kind of lies to propagate across the country, and nobody, it seems, in the media corrects them?
Well, lies go back for millennia, and some of the war lies that I look at in the book go back for millennia. Voter fraud, I think, is a fairly new lie, but as far as lying goes and miscommunication goes and fear-mongering and misdirection and bigotry go, you know, these have been around a while.
Well, they have, but I think there's a difference, and I think the way it's propagated now across the country, across talk radio specifically, which is completely, as George Bush would say, misunderestimated as far as the power that it has to reach the people and to tell these lies. And you would think in the age of the internet, we wouldn't fall for it quite so easily. But your book, and we'll get back to the old lies and the old wars, but your book certainly talks about just how does it make the claim that it's easier to lie now than ever?
I don't know, but it is the case that the lies we tell each other about wars are sort of permanent now, where just a century ago they would come when it was time for a war and then not be heard from again for a few years at least until it was time for another war. Now it's just a permanent, not just war economy and war structure of government, but war propaganda is just unending. And the media cartel that controls so much of our communications worsens that, to be sure.
It does, and we're going to talk about that and a whole bunch more. We've got a big, long segment coming up with David Swanson after this short break, and then we'll be back with David to talk about all of the lies and all of the wars, and I'll give him the tough questions. Brad, in for Mike. Stay with us. Yeah, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike. And that was kind of hot music there, Tone. Thank you, sir. Speaking with David Swanson, author of the provocative new book, War is a Lie. Get more information at warisalie.org. Okay, let me, as I said earlier in the program here, a lot of talk of a lot of saber rattling going on in the Koreas over Iran. And yet, and we're seeing today, as of today, we've been in Afghanistan longer than even the Soviet Union in what is our longest war ever for this country. And it has really become something, you know what? We don't even think about it. Most of us don't even think about it. All the news today is what? Black Friday. Get out there and shop. Well, David Swanson has been thinking about it, and his new book is about exactly that, and makes some pretty provocative charges. David, welcome back to the show, sir. If I could read just the opening paragraph, if you don't mind, of your book, the introduction.
Help yourself.
Because I think that'll set things up nicely. All right. David writes, "Not a single thing that we commonly believe about wars that helps keep them around is true. Wars cannot be good or glorious, nor can they be justified as a means of achieving peace or anything else of value. The reasons given for wars before, during, and after them, often three very different sets of reasons for the same war, are all false. It's common to imagine that because we never go to war without a good reason, having gone to war, we simply must have a good reason. This needs to be reversed, because there can be no good reason for war. Having gone to war, we are participating in a lie." David, That's some pretty provocative stuff there, my friend. Are you saying that even a war that I think by now most people agree on, World War II, for example, was not good or glorious, and that we should not have gone into World War II?
Well, of course I am. And, of course, it's hard to say that in a blog or even on a radio show, but when you say it with 350 pages of evidence, that you are at the very least making a case. And so, you know, the lies that were sort of told after the fact about World War II have to do with the extreme evil of the Nazis and the attack on the Jews in particular, which of course had nothing whatsoever to do with the war during it or before it, when our government and our president in particular were very careful that it have nothing to do with the Jews, would not admit a single additional immigrant, killed bills that would have let Jewish refugee children into our country, enforced a blockade that prevented the expulsion of the Jews, which led to the extermination of the Jews. It had absolutely nothing to do with it. The lies that we were told before World War II focused on the idea that it was somehow defensive to go into war in Europe because we'd been attacked by Japan,
right,
and that we were attacked by Japan out of this clear blue sky and the best intentions in the world, despite having known perfectly well the attack was coming, having sought very diligently to provoke it, having destroyed Japan with economic sanctions, having provoked Japan with the construction of bases and airstrips around the Pacific, having participated on behalf of China in war on Japan, and having laid out plans for years and in those months and weeks for aggressive war on Japan, having wanted nothing more, and Winston Churchill as well, having wanted nothing more than for Japan to attack the United States, which would supposedly permit the United States to jump into the war.
Mm-hmm.
A war that was instigated following many lies told about Germany as well, FDR renewing the sorts of lies that Woodrow Wilson had told to get us into World War One, lies about unprovoked German submarine attacks on ships, whereas Roosevelt knew perfectly well the ships were working with British planes to attack the subs. Roosevelt had a forged map, a British forgery of a map of the Americas showing the Nazis' plans to slice up this hemisphere for Nazi domination. Pure fiction of the sort of quality of forgery that Bush used to claim that Iraq was buying uranium. I mean, if you're going to tell me that a war that you have to lie about to get us into it, you have to lie about everything along the way, and you have to come up with completely new lies after the fact, that secretly somehow this is a justifiable war, and Americans before, during, and after were just too stupid to know it and had to be lied into it, you know, this really shakes the very idea of government of the people. And I think any operation that kills 70 million human beings does absolutely no good for the world and creates a permanent war state that does endless disaster for a half century following, that's somehow defensible. You have to at least make a case for it. You can't just scream, ooh, Nazis.
Okay, well, ooh, Nazis. Well, there's a lot to unpack there, David Swanson. Let me try to go about it this way. How about in the case of Great Britain? Did they have a justification to go into war, or did they too have to lie? And if they had to lie, is lying ever justified in a case, for example, as we saw with Nazis and they're killing millions of people?
War lies are criminalized in international treaty and should be criminalized in our laws, and in some ways they are. I mean, Bush lying to Congress about Iraq war lies was a felony, and Nixon lying to the public about Vietnam war motivations was mm-hmm. nearly an impeachable offense, and I think that's generally the right approach. And with Great Britain and Germany, I mean, the closer you get to the war actually beginning, beginning, the easier it becomes to scare people into thinking it was somehow justified. I mean, you back up months or years or decades, and you consider that, well, maybe we didn't have to end World War One by punishing an entire population rather than its rulers. Maybe we didn't have to impose those penalties, and then maybe we didn't have to support the Nazis and sell them weapons and finance them for decades. Maybe we should have invested in democracy in Germany instead of investing in eugenics research for them. You know, there are different approaches we could have taken.
But if we, David, if we did those things, at some point when we realize that they are not morally justified, don't we have the right to actually do something about it, whether we were complicit in the first place?
Absolutely.
Don't we have the moral imperative to do something about it when you discover, and I guess your suggestion is that it wasn't until, you know, after the war, essentially, that we said, oh, we went into World War II to save millions of Jews in concentration camps, that was not the original premise for going to war. But even still, once we know about these things, these atrocities, don't we have a moral imperative to do something about them? Or are you suggesting that because we went along with them all along, you know, much as we went along with Saddam Hussein and his chemical weapons, and, you know, yes, they got them from us, but nonetheless, and Saddam's not a good example, so let's go back to Hitler, which is a much easier case. Don't we then have an imperative to do something about it, no matter how we came to that point?
Well, the problem underlying your question is the idea that all-out war and the murder of 70 million human beings or nothing are the only two choices. So we have to do something. So we have to have World War II. Those are not obviously the only two choices. If you were to claim that they
what
were...
What was another choice? What was another choice in World War II, particularly after we're hit by Japan in Pearl Harbor? What other choices might we have taken, David?
We might have chosen to leave Europe to its own devices, as we ought to have done in World War One, as we certainly did with all imperial outbursts, including Napoleon's, preceding that drive for war here in our country. And we ought to have sought peace and negotiation and fought defensively if attacked, but not seek empire. We were not fighting a war against empire while building an empire. We were not fighting a war against discrimination or racism or concentration camps while using them. You can't make a case that that in reality we go to wars from a moral imperative to fight dictators, when half our wars are fought on behalf of dictators, half the dictators in the world are left alone unmolested as our allies. It makes no sense in terms of the record to say, well, you know, we didn't notice Saudi Arabia sitting there. We had to attack Iraq and Iran maybe next week because they have evil dictators. It doesn't.
Clearly, David, we pick and choose what wars we want to get into. We pick and choose which of the evil dictators we will decide are evil and which ones we will actually do business with. But the notion that there is nothing in this world that is so bad, particularly, again, what we certainly now know about was going on in Germany, and we do know that our allies in Great Britain were being mercilessly attacked.
Okay,
we're up against
up.
The wall.
What do you mean we know that? Churchill attacked civilians in Germany before Germany attacked civilians in England, albeit Churchill claimed it was retribution. It was some sort of time travel retribution. England was a country hell-bent on war. And you can say, well, Hitler was evil. You can't negotiate with evil people. He's going to go to war eventually, probably, so we have to start it first preemptively and all of that. But, you know, what exactly would have been lost had you waited a day or a week or a month or a year and sought other means to resolve this crisis?
Another couple of million dead people would have been lost? Perhaps the perhaps
which couple of million dead people? You're talking about launching a war that kills 70 million. You're telling me it would have been 72 if we'd waited a week?
So you're saying that we did not follow our diplomatic options, that we were too fast to go into World War II after all of that time that we didn't go in, that we probably should have gone in a year earlier?
Roosevelt was asked several years earlier to talk to Hitler,
right.
And Roosevelt's reply was, I'm going to focus on manufacturing weapons. Now, you can reply endlessly that you just can't talk to evil people, but you can't say that war was your only option. War was the option preordained and chosen and aggressively pursued by all parties in this war.
Yeah, but I'm still having trouble wrapping my brain around, David. I got to tell you that no matter how we got to this place, no matter how we screwed it up going in, no matter how much we aided it, it seems to me that there is a moral justification at some point. And that's what I'm going to ask you about after we take a break. We've got to get to a quick break here. Speaking with David Swanson, author of the, as I promised, provocative new book, War is a Lie. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, you can at 877-522-1150. That's 877-520-1150. When we come back, I will ask David what actually would be a justification for war, as he seems to be suggesting that there never is any. We'll see if I got that right or not. And I should mention, David Swanson is a good friend of mine. And so it's an interesting conversation. 877-520-1150. Brad in for Mike Malloy. Speaking with David Swanson. Much more right after this. Say it again. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, speaking with David Swanson, author of the new bestseller, War is a Lie. War is a Lie. You can get more information at warisalie.org, or you can go in there and displace George W. Bush off the bestseller list by going over to Amazon.com. And buying it, it's available, of course, at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, blah, 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 all the rest. And we were speaking, David, welcome back to the show, sir. We were speaking before the break, about World War II. And you were just about making the argument, I think, that it was not justified for us to get into World War II as if we should have let it play out. Am I understanding that correctly, sir?
Well, here's the thing, and I should say also that Brad Friedman is a good friend of mine, and you know, it drives me crazy the idea that debating important issues should be seen as involving animosity just because everybody on cable television news calls each other devils. You know?
Well, exactly, but that's why I wanted to point this out, that you and I are not, you know, we don't hate each other, but we're debating what is, I think, a very interesting topic and a courageous one for you to make this, you know, because there's a lot of information out there about how Bush lied us into war, and I've got a piece that I'm going to cover in the next hour about that. And, you know, plenty of lies, but you're taking a right to them on World War II. So,
well, here's the thing. Yeah. Not just you, but almost every defender of war in any sense has to go back 70 years to a completely different world, a world that was not dominated by U.S. bases on every continent, a very different scene, to find a war that they want to defend. If I have to give you that, if I have to say you can go back 70 years and there's a defensible war, but all of the other ones since are just as indefensible and obnoxious and immoral and criminal as they look, you know, how much do I really lose? Because what we move on to from there is ending every war that's underway or being pushed by propaganda at the moment.
You know what? Let me get to a call because there's the phone lines are lighting up here. And let's get someone else who disagrees with you. I think Kevin in San Francisco. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Thank you very much. You know, I have a very simple question. Would the Jews in World War II have had a right to go to war with Hitler? I mean, all the things they had, advantages and whatever, that could have talked to him, as they're being marched off to concentration camps, would they have had a right to take up arms and fight him?
Fair enough. Let me get an answer. David, you say there is no justification for war, so the Jews are being sent in trains to concentration camp, going to their death. Would they have been right to stand up and fight a war at that point?
Well, traditionally, in law, it is legal to resist, including violently. It is legal to resist a violent attack, whether a group within a nation or one nation against another. I think morally, you have to make the case that the best thing to do is the thing that would have been most effective. And I think that common wisdom, very much to the contrary, Gandhi was right. And I think that the example that was set by the German women who had Jewish husbands locked up and who got them out by protesting nonviolently in Berlin was a good example. And that when Gandhi said, you know, it would require thousands of people to give their lives, but nonviolent resistance is the way to go, you can say, oh, how horrible, how horrible. But again, we're talking about the most destructive act in human history, killing 70 million people in an outrageously destructive war. It's hard to imagine a worse alternative.
Let me give Kevin a chance to respond there, because we're coming up to the top.
Yes, Gandhi, wonderful, all that. It's nonsense. It's nonsense. Everything you're saying is nonsense, because it's extreme. It is so far to one side. As you just said, the Jews should have walked to the concentration camp and peacefully agreed to walk into the ovens. What you said is so nonsense and
okay,
crazy
and let me get it. Hang on.
Their lives should have saved them. Are you insane?
Hang on, Kevin. Thanks, Kevin. I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off, but I'm coming to the top of the hour. And, Dave, can you hang over with us over the top of the hour?
Sure, except for that bit about what I just said that I didn't just say.
Well, I know, and that's why I wanted to let you respond. I've only got 30 seconds. Can you do it in that, or do you want to wait until after the top of the hour?
Well, people can play it back and see that I didn't say anything like what Kevin said.
All right, we'll take a few more calls for you after the top of the hour. I'm going to stay with David Swanson here, 877-520, author of War is a Lie. Provocative book, as you can tell, not just World War II, but all the lies. David Swanson staying with us. Brad in for Malloy. Stay with us.